The first volume, dedicated to Alfred Cortot, should have included performances of Schumann's Carnival, Etude Symphonique and Kreisleriana in recordings from 1928, 1929 and 1935. By mistake, the performances which appeared were in fact recorded in 1953. The CDs were immediately withdrawn by Philips and reissued with the correct earlier versions. Well, Gerald, two of those recordings, I think, were unreleased and have never been released since, so that's a real rarity if you've got those original versions. Well, thank you so much for listening, everybody, this morning, and for being a wonderful company for me. All your texts and emails, which I so appreciate. I hope you'll join me again next week, same time, 9 o'clock, and for Essential Classics at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Sunday Morning with Rob Cowan is a perfectly normal production for BBC Radio 3, with studio production this morning by Lyndon Jones.
You have three boys still alive.
Yeah.
Two are in prison.
Yes.
And Jeffrey's in a wheelchair.
Yes.
Gary Young travels to California to talk to three generations of the same family.
It's difficult for me to imagine that that was the plan you had for them. What do you think went wrong?
Three generations of incarceration.
Well, you know, I don't know. I asked myself that question a million times. What did I do wrong?
Over on BBC Radio 4 on Tuesday evening at 8.
And this is BBC Radio 3, where it's time now for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
The poet Christopher Reed has worked on both sides of the publishing fence, having been poetry editor at Faber and Faber for 8 years, and even run his own publishing house. His poems have been garlanded with prizes and accolades from the very first book, Arcadia, published in 1979, to A Scattering, a set of elegies for his late wife, which won the Costa Book of the Year in 2009. Now Faber have just published Selected Poems. I think this is a selection up until Scattering.
That's right. It was actually put to me by my editor at Faber's that I should put together a Selected Poems 10 years ago. And because I completely lack that retrospective instinct, I put it off and put it off and put it off. And when A Scattering came out and achieved the success it did, it just became obvious that people wanted to know what I'd written before then. And so I sat down and put together 120 pages of poetry.
How do you feel, I'm interested as a composer, how do you feel going back and looking at earlier pieces? Do they seem by somebody else, or are they very much yours? Do you like them despite seeing things you do differently?
I found that I warmed most to my earliest work, which came as a surprise. Yes, I still recognise myself in the fellow who wrote those early poems, but he's really quite different. I mean, there's a lot more naive life in them, the energy that comes simply from the boldness of doing something for the first time. I had the feeling then that I was really doing something new. Now, I realise now that what I was doing wasn't really as new as all that, but if you're under the illusion that you're innovating and making discoveries that are totally fresh, that just gives you energy in itself.
Do you find that there are quite interesting correlations between poetry and music?
Well, there are correlations, but you can't bring them too close to each other. The disciplines are really utterly different. However, in poetry, you are dealing in sonority, and you're dealing in cadence, and you're dealing in rhythm, and those are all in music.
The first music is jazz, in fact, and I think something about the friction between two players here that attracts you.
Yeah, it does indeed. The piece in question is Weatherbird, played by Louis Armstrong and Earl Hines, and they played together in the Armstrong's Hot 5 and Hot 7, but on this occasion, it's just the two of them, and it's like a kind of a match that's taking place. They're really pulling in different directions, but somehow keeping the show on the road at the same time. And it's a very, very exciting, it's not exactly combat, but you feel that there's a little bit of kind of alpha male clashing of horns there.
I think there's quite a bit of mischief in there too, don't you?
Yes, yes. Just a moment ago I said there were just the two of them playing, but I somehow think that Earl Hines is two people, represented by his left hand and his right hand, and they're at odds.
And they're at odds, yes.
Very fruitfully and inventively, but nonetheless, you know, it's as if his left hand is trying to catch his right hand out at times.
Weatherbird by Louis Armstrong. We heard him and Earl Hines playing the piano. Christopher, that idea of something that actually is rather on the edge and taking risks can, of course, apply in classical music too.
Well, it does. This is the most extraordinary performance of a Beethoven sonata that usually gets rather more respectful treatment, rather more salon-friendly treatment than it does with these two players. Yes, not so different from the Armstrong and Hines confrontation. There's a huge element of trying things out on the spot, I think. Even though it's a studio recording, it's extraordinary.
Thank you.
was very exhilarating.
Electric.
We heard the third movement, the presto, it certainly was, of Beethoven's Violin Sonata in A, Opus 47, the Kreutzer, played by Patricia Kopachinskaya, and Fazil Say was playing the piano. Do you like poetry that does something similar? I mean, if you think back to the poets that have always interested you, were they ones that had an element of that in their writing?
I certainly came to love poetry through writing that was somewhat over the top. Dylan Thomas was a great figure in my teenage reading, and Edith Sitwell too, as it happens, both writers not known for their quiet spokenness.
Yes. And when you're going back into earlier generations, what about people like Donne and Smart and people like that?
Oh, yes. Donne is a colossal figure. I get deeper and deeper into him. A lot of his poems seem to me about to collapse in on themselves. They're trying out so many things at once. And sometimes you get the sense that Donne's trying things out just for the sake of trying them out. That's part of the charm of his love poetry, poems like Valediction, Forbidding Morning, where you don't really believe that he means the arguments, but they're so tempting to construct and so elegant in the way they come out and so witty. And one argument follows another and follows another. And it's the sheer exuberance of the imagination that wins one over.
I think you feel there's an element of edginess even in our next performance, though it's a traditional song.
Absolutely. It's a tragic song, which is given its full tragic power by Maddie Pryor and Steel Eye Span. She is, it seems to me here, the ultimate woman scorned. Not furious exactly, though there's some anger in her performance, but it's majestic and tragic.
Oh, a blacksmith courted me.
Slighting on me. What did you bring?
Quite a lot of your music, Christopher Reed, has, well, both an element of Living Dangerously, but also a strong folk influence, if not actually sort of folk music itself.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't aware of that when putting this programme together, but you're dead right.
Well, we heard The Blacksmith with Maddie Pryor and Steel Eye Span. Let's hear one of your poems now, Christopher. And it would be nice perhaps to hear the one called Songbook, given that we're hearing some songbooks, as it were.
Yes, it's from A Scattering, the book of poems about my late wife. She was an actress, and one of her stage skills was to be able to sing. She wasn't a great singer. I make no claims for her superiority there, but she loved singing and would burst out around the house doing odd jobs, as I describe here, and had a very wide and rather eccentric repertoire, which I celebrate in this poem, Songbook. Songs that used to lift up lightly out of the solitude that she occupied. Where are they now? Songs that sprang from solitary activity, sewing or cooking, but that sought and touched my solitude. Songs that elided distance and closeness, self-sufficiency and companionship, sent out from this room or that on a wing and a breath of intrepid melody, chancing flight from note to note through phrases I could tell were relished for their harmony-implying turns, leaping intervals and tricky runs, before settling on keynote and silence. A silence now final and hard to listen to. Show tunes, folk tunes, leader, blues, stern laments of the Italian Baroque, meretricious bonbons of pop recalled from a wireless-centred 50s childhood, a whole unique, improbable songbook. Silent, deleted, permanently lost, as a language or a culture is lost. Irreparable damage.
It's rather appropriate that we're going to hear something called Arnius following that, except that there is a controlled, barely suppressed turbulence here.
Well, that's the thing that interests me about it. I've actually first heard this piece at a concert on the South Bank celebrating Berio, and he conducted the very small forces required for this piece. I don't know why he was conducting. I think they might have got on just as happily without him, but nonetheless, he was there. And I was immediately struck by his clever use of singers and musical instruments of the same register. So you get a very, very tight sonority, and that sonority seems to me to be packing something down, keeping something unsaid almost, but with little eddies and flurries of turbulence just to shake the surface.
Oh,
Doesn't he write so wonderfully for the female voice, and not just tenderly, but with a sort of sense of how much that voice is capable of? There's so much imagination in the writing, isn't there?
Almost like birdsong at times.
Yes, that's right.
Elise Ross and Mary Thomas were the sopranos with the London Sinfonietta, conducted by the composer Luciano Berio, and that was Agnus. Somehow it seems fitting to me, but I don't know why, and you're going to tell me, Christopher Reed, that we should have Bach next.
It's largely for the performance, in fact, that I've chosen this saraband from one of the partitas. And I think it is connected to the Berio to the extent that the performance is a very, very subdued one. And I'm fascinated by how far the performer, who is Rosalind Turek in this case, can take herself away from considerations of pleasing or holding the attention of the listener and simply delight herself with her playing. There are miraculous moments in this particular performance where she's playing so quietly, it's almost as if she doesn't really want to touch the notes. She just wants to think them. And I think that makes for a marvellous intimacy and sense of privilege.
fourth movement, the Saraband, from Bach's Partita No. 3 in A minor, played by Rosalind Turek. I imagine that the opacity, if you like, of the construction there appeals to you as a poet, because you can see it, you can hear the phrases coming back or moved up a fifth or whatever it is.
That's right. I'm less lost in that piece than I am in some of Bach's other keyboard works. Yes, I mean, it's a very, very shapely piece that almost has an element of refrain, doesn't it?
Jerome Kern next, Christopher Reed, but a pianist who took many amazing journeys, trips, I'm almost inclined to say, with the piano.
Trips has a double edge there, doesn't it? But yes, we're talking about Thelonious Monk and his solo performance of Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. He's a great performer, of course, of his own music and a great composer. But I think I even prefer him when he's tackling somebody else's music, a standard like this one, and what fun he has with it. It's slightly private fun in the way that I think Rosalind Turek's performance was inward-looking rather than extrovert. I think of him as unpacking this particular tune. Let's see what we can find inside it, and throwing things out of the suitcase, as it were, as he discovers them in a kind of delight. It's a very respectful treatment of that song in many ways, isn't it? You feel that this is the acknowledgement by one composer of another composer's mastery, as much as the tinkering and pulling things to pieces.
So you would be able to put all the clothes back into the suitcase if necessary.
Yes, exactly.
Jerome Kern's Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, as realised by Thelonious Monk in Paris in June of 1954. An earlier period now, we're going to hear music by Tobias Hume.
Yes, from the beginning of the 17th century. A piece for viol, just the one voice, as it were. And I think the playing here gives the piece the air of being sung. It is an air, isn't it, that Tobias Hume has composed. And again, it's very intimate. It's very melancholy and touching.
And in some ways unexpected, that the emotion that you do get from these early pieces of music on a single instrument, and yet incredibly expressive.
Mm.
Jordi Savall played Love's Farewell by Tobias Hume.
He was an extravagant and boisterous fellow, wasn't he? And a picker of fights and general troublemaker, as well as a musician of great tenderness, plainly.
And there was an idea that he might have inspired Ache Cheek and Twelfth Night.
I didn't know that.
So, we move on to more folk orientated music in terms of Bartok string quartet, which, to my mind, these string quartets are the greatest since Beethoven.
Yeah, I wouldn't dispute that. I don't know why I have this particular penchant, but it certainly helped Bartok to write an utterly contemporary kind of music without losing touch with the essence of music. Different 20th century composers found their own ways of taking music forward, and some of them, I think, actually did lose the audience in the process. But Bartok's clinging to essential folk melody and the sense of song and dance was his way of not losing sight of the audience.
Thank you.
The third movement, the Scherzo alla Bulgarese and Trio from Bartók's String Quartet No. 5, played by the Belcher Quartet. As we were listening to that, Christopher Reed, I wondered whether, in terms of advancing your language as a poet, or indeed any language that is written down in words, whether you're limited in a sense by words and letters in a way that music perhaps is not?
Well, it's very hard to get away from syntactical structures, and I've experimented occasionally with trying to trouble those structures from some depth underneath, but you have to make sentences, and you're also bound by a sense of what the line as a unit of music can do. I'm not saying that there are strict limits to what is possible, but it's dangerous to step beyond a certain point, because everything falls to pieces in your hands if you do so. You can't do that in verse, sadly.
Right, now finally we've got some wonderful jazz musicians, including Muggsy Spanier, who I always like encountering.
Muggsy Spanier, yes, and Sidney Bechet.
So this is 4 or 5 times, and what do you love about it?
Well, I like the elegance of it. I think there are two very fine musicians paying tribute to each other in a give-and-take sort of way. Bechet takes 8 bars and Spanier replies with
the
8
cornet.
Bars.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having a kind of good time guys conversation. There's an edge of competition there too, I think.
Because if only that one of them might be saying, yeah, well, now listen, see what you could do with that then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's done in the nicest and the most gentle and sweet kind of way. Yeah, there is competition. And I think, you know, in that competition, Bechet proves himself the superior musician. But never mind, Muggsy Spanier is pretty fine as well.
That was the Hillman and Gay number 4 or 5 times, played by Sidney Bechet on the soprano saxophone, Muggsy Spanier on the cornet, Carmen Mastron guitar, and Wellman Browd bass. So, Christopher, now that you've got your selected poems in this new edition and you had that great success with The Scattering, I'm wondering whether you are writing for a new collection.
I've actually finished a new collection already, and I hope that will come out next year. Working title is Nonsense.
We look forward to that. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Christopher Reed was talking to Michael Barclay. Next week on Private Passions, there's another chance to hear the actress Olivia Williams discussing her musical enthusiasms with Michael. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3, and the producer of today's edition was Chris Marshall. Well, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome from me, Ian Skelly, to the afternoon on Radio 3. We're going to be off to King's Place in London in just a moment for a concert of early music given by Fretwork. The actor Tom Courtney takes part in the concert too. And winners of a competition that defies time by the sounds of it, an award offered by Radio 3 and the National Centre for Early Music, an award to young composers of early music. You can find out in just a moment after a summary of the BBC News this lunchtime, read by David Cornett.
Italian rescue workers have winched a third survivor to safety from inside the cruise ship which ran aground off the coast of Tuscany on Friday. The man, who is a member of the Costa Concordia's crew, has been airlifted to hospital with a serious leg injury. Local officials say 17 people are still unaccounted for. The Foreign Secretary, William Hague, has said the latest information suggests that all Britons are safe. Gunmen have stormed a police building in the Iraqi city of Ramadi, west of Baghdad, after setting off several bombs outside. The gunmen were said to be wearing explosive belts. Police and provincial officials say that at least 6 people died in the attack. The Labour leader, Ed Miliband, has echoed the words of the Shadow Chancellor, Ed Balls, who said yesterday that Labour could not promise to reverse the government's spending cuts. Mr Miliband said he would not cut as deeply as the coalition has, but he would be forced to make some cuts because government borrowing would still be high at the next election. 2 big trade unions in Nigeria say they'll resume nationwide strikes tomorrow after failing to reach agreement with the government to cut fuel prices. The general strike began last Monday over the removal of subsidies, which has doubled energy costs. The Syrian state news agency says President Assad has offered a general amnesty for all crimes committed during the uprising, which began in March last year. Human rights groups say the authorities have detained and tortured thousands of people. There were at least 4 such amnesties last year. The Secretary of State for Scotland, Michael Moore, has asked Scotland's First Minister, Alex Salmond, to meet him in Edinburgh later this week to discuss the referendum on independence. Mr Moore says there are legal problems which need to be resolved. The Scottish and British governments disagree too about the timing of the vote and about the question that will be asked. And the weather, it'll become mostly bright with sunny spells, although it'll be cloudier in parts of the south and the northwest. BBC News and weather at 1:03.
David, thank you. Well, in an hour from now, we're going to be at Brangwen Hall in Swansea to hear 2 great orchestral showpieces from the 1940s, Stravinsky's Symphony in 3 Movements and the Symphonic Dances by Rachmaninoff. Olery Eltz conducts the BBC National Orchestra of Wales in a concert recorded last night, in fact, and making our Sunday concert here on Radio 3 beginning at 2. But now it's time for the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping.
Hello. In today's programme, a chance to hear the winning entries from the 2011 National Centre for Early Music Young Composers Award, which was given in partnership with BBC Radio 3 and the celebrated viol group Fretwork. The winning compositions were given their official premiere by Fretwork at the end of last year in a public concert at King's Place in London. So as well as these brand new pieces from some of the country's brightest young musicians, we'll also be hearing highlights from that concert in today's show, including music by Laws, Dowland, Bird and Purcell. Now, you might just be thinking that including works by young 21st century composers in a programme that's concerned with the music of the distant past is a little strange. But the early music movement, in fact, has been remarkably successful in founding a whole new discipline and approach to music making with a fabulous panoply of fresh sounds and artistic insights, a rich source of inspiration for creative musicians. It was this spirit that prompted the competition's launch a few years ago, and by setting out to appeal to young composers, the hope was to engage them in the many possibilities that early music has to offer. The response has been fantastic, as I hope you'll agree when you hear the winning entries. It's been especially rewarding to have as our performing partners for the 2011 competition the viol group Fretwork, who themselves have done much to pioneer the idea of new music for old instruments. They've already been responsible for commissioning contemporary viol music from several of today's leading composers. Here's Fretwork's Richard Boothby.
The fact that we play contemporary music has changed the way we play old music. One of the things that it has done for us, it has suggested a wider palette of colours and musical expression than we would otherwise have been using, because contemporary composers demand that you play extremely quietly, extremely loudly, extremely short, extremely long, extremely high, all those extremities are outside the initial aesthetic of 16th and 17th century music. But I believe that they were very much part of the way in which the music was performed, and that we have been ignoring the more expressive side of it for a perfection of ensemble and tuning and that sort of thing. The contemporary music gives us a way of looking at it which is different from how we would otherwise look at it.
Richard Boothby. Well, before we hear the winning compositions, let's listen to some music from the rest of Fretwork's King's Place concert. The theme for the evening was The Year's Midnight, which was inspired by the idea of the winter solstice. And alongside music, the concert featured verse read from the stage by the great English actor Sir Tom Courtney. And Fretwork were also joined by the soprano Claire Wilkinson.
Out in the dark over the snow, the fallow fawns invisible go with the fallow doe, and the winds blow fast as the stars are slow. Stealthily the dark haunts round, and when the lamp goes without sound at a swifter bound than the swiftest hound, arrives, and all else is drowned. And star and I and wind and deer are in the dark together, near yet far, and fear drums on my ear in that sage company drear. How weak and little is the light, all the universe of sight, love and delight, before the might, if you love it not, of night.